Hi, everybody. It's Ross. Welcome to the program. Today is going to be really interesting. We have someone on who I don't even know how to have this conversation, but we're going to try. Let me bring you back a month ago. It was the 19th of November. I was up in Seattle. A casino just outside of Seattle. 800 people had tickets to my show. Me, some of my favorite drag queens. We put on the most amazing drag show. It was so much fun that night. I'll never forget it. I remember thinking of the energy in there was so positive. I felt like we had put something beautiful, something good out into the world. And then I woke up the next morning, the 20th, and grabbed my phone and looked, and it said, mass shooting at a gay bar, Club Q in Colorado Springs, five people dead. And my heart just broke. Every mass shooting is terrible, 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 unacceptable. I'm sick of them. I'm furious about it. But here I saw that people had just been shot for doing what I had just been doing the night before, being somewhere where drag queens were, God forbid. Right? Can you even begin to start thinking about that? I mean, I imagine a lot of you listening here have gone to a gay bar, gotten drinks, been to a drag show, had fun. And can you imagine in the middle of that, you go from that joyous feeling to then somebody trying to kill you, killing people around you. I can't wrap my head around it. I have done what those people at Club Q were doing for so long. I've done it a million times in my life. I've been there, and it could have been us, you guys. It could have been us. And five people died, which is unacceptable, which is heartbreaking. But if it weren't for the heroism of Richard Fierro, it would have been much worse. Richard's the man who grabbed the gun from the gunman and beat him up, held him, and stopped the senseless killing. I met Richard backstage at the Drew Barrymore show. I walked into the room and I was covered with chills because I was meeting a hero. I was meeting somebody who, because of his actions, saved lives. And I talked to Richard and I talked to his wife, Jess, and I just said, would you come on my show? I need to know what it was like, because it could have been us. And heartbreakingly, it was them. It was Richard. It was his family. His daughter's, Cassidy's boyfriend, Raymond, is one of those who died. And it's really too soon, I think. You know, it just was a month ago. But he's here. I'm like, you know, I don't know what to ask about. I mean, I know what I want to know, but I want to know how he is. I want to know how his family is. And I want to know what it was like. It could have been us. Richard Fierro is here to say hello, Ross, and to talk to us about the most terrifying thing I can imagine. He'll be here. We'll have a wonderful conversation with him. Deep, interesting, and I hope worthy of our time. Richard Fierro is up next.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Hello, Ross.
Richard Fierro. I'm so beyond thrilled to chat with you, because it's not every day we have an actual life-saving hero on our show. And I was so lucky to get to meet you in New York. And right away, I mean, I walked in that room and just hugged you. Do you remember that? We were in the makeup room.
Yeah, no, I was in total shock, because I remember you from Leno. Like, I used to watch that a lot, and it was hilarious. So Please don't ask me any questions on this that I don't know. but it was one of those things where I was just like, holy crap, we're actually doing this. Because up until that point, you know, and just to see you and the actual concern and love and support you actually gave to us was a blessing. And we were so happy to be there. You guys treated us so well.
Good. I'm glad. Well, I couldn't believe when I saw, you know, we work on a TV show, you know, all the upcoming guests, we have a billboard with all the names coming on the dates. And every day I go in and look, oh, who's coming up. And when I saw your name was coming up, I actually couldn't believe it because I had been reading about you and kind of obsessed with you since that terrible day in November. I just want to walk you back a little bit. And I kind of want to just, if you don't mind. My plan with you today is I want to heap praise on you and I want you to accept the hero status.
It's been hard, but I'll try.
Well, I will help you today accept that because you deserve a hero status. I want to hear about that day. I want to hear about before that day and I want to hear about after. Yeah. But first, Richard, if it's okay, can I just go back into a little bit about who you are and your history. You were in the military, right? For a long time.
Yeah. I did 15 years, three tours in Iraq, one tour in Afghanistan. So I've seen some things that, you know, not a lot of people have seen, both good and bad. And it's an ugly thing. I mean, bottom line is nobody wants to do it, but somebody has to. But that's the thing I signed up for. I didn't sign up for this here, and neither did my wife and kid. They were already going through the time of dealing with me gone that many times. And for them to go through it themselves, it's just a whole nother realm. You know, like I still can't get over it because it's my whole family. Like my daughter, my wife, we lost Raymond and my two best friends from Colorado Springs. There's no escaping this. This is like a daily thing for all of us. And it's crazy.
So I want to get to know you a little bit. So you're an Army veteran who married your wife when you were really young. You guys been together since the early 90s, and you have a family. And one of your daughter's name is Cassandra, right?
Yes, Cassie.
Cassie, we call it Cassie. Okay, and Cassie had her boyfriend was Raymond, correct?
Yes. And so they met in high school.
They met high school too. Same as you and your mom. Okay. Or your wife. So, you know, and you're all close knit family, right? And I'm painting the picture now. So it's November 19th, I think, right?
Yes.
And your daughter says, you know, we want to bring you down to a club because there's a drag show. Now, for starters, I would go to a drag show with you any day. You seem like a lot of fun.
So yes, that's true. And I would absolutely go with you because there's another place down here called Icons where they do like sing along with this stuff. It is amazing. So we have a great time there too. Anyway, my daughter had grown up with Wyatt, who is known as Potted Plant, and he does drag. So he was performing and it was his birthday and he had invited Cass, and Cass was like, Mom, Dad, we need to go. And we were like, okay, it's little Wyatt. We got to support him. So we went to dinner, and then that evening we showed up at Club Q, and it was my first time in that specific location. My wife and daughter had been there before to see Wyatt perform. So it was my first time to see Wyatt. It was a new experience for me, but I was like, oh, this is cool. There's nothing wrong with this place. Mm-hmm. So we were hanging out. We were drinking, having a good time. And then Wyatt's performance and all the performers were freaking awesome, right? And it was not like a packed show. So we were, you know, we're tipping, we're doing all the, it was just amazing.
I wanted to talk, you know, I was reading in the New York Times about you. They wrote about, because of your history working in the military, you're sort of always on guard. And like you talked about how you even go into restaurants, you don't sit with your back to anything. You're sort of always prepped and always thinking like that. That's just ingrained in you now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that you inherently just start thinking about because you're worried about, you know, am I going to get caught off guard? And what was funny is when we walked into that club, the seat and the table we're sitting at was probably one that I would not pick because it was right with our door to our backs to the door, and we were right out coming out of the hallway. So we were the first table coming down the little hallway there. And I told Jess, I was like, hey, why don't we sit on the booths? And they were against the wall. And she was like, no, I want to be close so that we can see Wyatt. Mm-hmm. And so we sat there with five chairs, not six. And there were six of us. So Chip and Joanne was sitting on Chip's lap during the show. And we were just like making it work, you know. And it was one of those moments where we were like just happy. And at the end of the day, once she tells me something like that, I don't worry about anything. Mm-hmm. I have my initial instinct of, hey, let's go sit over there. And if my wife and daughter say, hey, no, we don't want to do that today, then I go along with it. It's been a while since I've been so queued up, but, you know, we'll see where we get now.
Tell me about the vibe, though, in there. You're saying it's a birthday party. The drag performers were wonderful. Was it your first drag show there? And what did it feel like? What was the energy in there? Because I know a thing or two about drag shows, and I know they're kind of amazing vibes. They're such good energy. What was going on inside there before the terrible turn?
We're really looking for solace in that because we were having such a great time. We've been to the brunches. We went to Miami and saw some, you know, drag brunch shows. And so we've done a lot of this stuff just for fun. And I was excited, you know, and these are junior kids. These are not, you know, long-term professional, you know, drag performers. These are kids trying to get started. So this is like, you know, Wyatt's 22 and he's doing his thing, but this is when you go to like that stand-up comedy club to see Kevin Hart perform before he becomes something big, you know, you just go and watch these kids give it their all. And they were just amazing. We were tipping out and it was just cool. And the vibe for us is the six of us, we were so happy and we had no intention. We were like, well, we'll go see the show and then we'll go home and we're good. And we were like, dude, this is too much fun. And so the girls started dancing. Raymond's dancing. I started dancing a little bit, Chip. And so we just, after the show, we just hung out with Wyatt or Potted Plant, excuse me. And we started dancing with everybody there. And it was just beautiful. No issues. No, like you go to a club and it's usually like a meat market and everybody's trying. This was just everybody being themselves and having fun.
And the reason I ask you that is because I think so many of our listeners have been to shows like that. You know, it was just another drag show and another gay bar, people having fun, having drinks, letting loose a little bit. And I want everyone to picture that. How many times have we been to something like that? How many times have we just been hanging out? And that I want everyone to understand that, because it's not like it happened to somebody else. It just happened to have happened to you because you were there just doing what we've all done a million times, hanging out. And then Richard, if you don't mind, and I don't want to push you hard. I don't want to take you back there, but can you tell us what happened?
Well, so I heard fires, which is, you know, for me, it's the same fire that I've done in 15 years. So I heard what was a rifle and I knew somebody was shooting.
Right away. You knew, you heard that sound and you knew.
As soon as I heard it, yeah. No, there was no doubt. I didn't think there was music. I dove down or I looked over my right shoulder to verify, like, is somebody actually shooting in here? And I saw the muzzle flash and like a shadow of the figure. And I said, oh, my God. So I took cover. So I don't know about, because cover, you're supposed to actually be protected. I just went down on the ground because you get low. It's usually a safest spot you're going to be. So I go down I dive down and Chip did the same thing. He was sitting right next to me. And I don't know when he got shot, but he got shot in his knee at that point. And Joanne had taken 5 bullets or whatever. And they were right next to me, you know. And I tried to get back up because I wanted to stop whatever was going on. As I tried to get up, I slipped on, it was probably beer or could have, you know, whatever's on the floor. And I fell back into the same booth that I had told Jess, hey, let's sit there. So this booth that's along the wall, I fell into that on my back. And as I hit that booth, I could see across the room into the, what would be the patio door and the figure of this guy there with his armor on. And so I ran across. And when I got there, Thomas was already starting to fight with him. I was fighting with him, and then we finally get him to the ground, and it was 6 minutes of ugly, you know, I mean, I don't like, that's the part I don't like talking about, only because for me, it's not something that's, I don't know, rare or unexpected, because I know what the human body does when it's beaten or shot at, but that's not something normal people do, right? And so when Thomas jumped out, he was fighting, and when we ended up on the floor, he was at the head of the guy and I was on his back and I was hitting him with his pistol. Thomas was kicking him and I kept motivating him. Thomas, keep kicking. Or I didn't know his name at the time. I was like, hey, just keep kicking, dude. And get the AR and like move the AR. And I'm yelling out, you know, hey, somebody call 911, call 911. And I just continue to hit him. And it was 6 minutes. I don't know how well I did or not. I just know that I could not let this guy get back up. He was fighting me the whole time. So we were just trying to keep him from getting up and continuing what he was doing. So we just kept hitting. There was a trans woman, and I can't remember her name, for the life of me. So this trans woman is running by, and I literally was like, he's slowing down because Thomas was hurt. I don't know the extent of his injuries. I still haven't met him. He's choosing to do things his way.
This is Thomas, who assisted you in bringing down the shooter.
Well, yeah, we both went at this guy. And so while he was kicking, he was injured and he was slowing down, and you could tell he was trying, but he just couldn't kick anymore. And then it was just me with this guy. So the trans woman was running by. I asked for her to kick this guy. The other guy's slowing down, and she came in and just started kicking, you know? And to me, that was one of those things when you ask someone to do something that's not human, right? It is not human to kick someone in the head. Mm-hmm. It's not. It may sound like something easy to do, or a video game, or whatever, but when you actually hit someone, there is a whole different realm and a different feeling, because you're doing something to the human body that shouldn't be done, regardless of what that person is, right? So for me to ask that, and for that young lady to respond that way, I thought it was amazing. She probably never, you know, even if she'd gotten into fights, that's a conscious decision. This was a, holy crap, this person was just shooting at me. Now I have to start hitting him. That's a hard thing to do.
Well, I want to go back just a little bit, and I want to thank you for sharing this, because I can't imagine having seen what you have seen. I mean, and I know you saw a lot of it in the military, but that night in November, what you saw, and I'm so curious about when you saw him come in with the guy. I mean, was there a moment, were you able to process it? Did it take a millisecond to go, oh my gosh, we're in the middle of a shooting, this is happening here?
No, that was it. I there was no thought process. So, and everybody asked me, like, what were you thinking? Did you make a decision? And I didn't. I knew that was gunfire. I knew where I was at, and it didn't make any sense to me. So I took cover to try and get oriented to where I'm at and not be shot. And when I turned around, I found the threat, and I go after that threat. And like I said, I did it for my family, my wife, my daughter, my daughter's boyfriend of 6 years, who I might as, and you know, in the Army, we always promote the person when they pass, they get their next rank. And that's why I refer to Ray as my son-in-law, because he, to me, he's earned that respect. He hadn't married her, but at this point, I have to refer to him that way because of what he did, you know, his heroic actions in that event.
And you lost Ray in the shooting.
Yeah. So
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But we never saw him that night. So it's been great for Cassie, only because she has the solace of the last moments. And I told her the best thing you could ever ask for is the last moments with the person you love, to be in total joy, dancing, laughing, smiling, kissing. And then they pass. They weren't in a hospital bed for 6 years with cancer, or had some disease that took forever for them to pass. They weren't in an ugly accident that you were part of and witnessed. The last thing she remembers is dancing with him and hugging and kissing him and having a great time. And as horrible as that sounds, I told her, I go, that's most people's dream, is to be able to spend their last moments with someone like that. And she was able to do that. So she's taking solace in that.
That's amazing perspective, Richard. How are you? How is Jess, your wife? How is Cassie, your daughter? How are you guys now? Because having seen that, it must change you in unspeakable ways.
Forever. And I said that too. We are changed. Everybody in that room is changed forever. Regardless of what they were doing, it was heroic for them to get through it. I mean, the people that ran, people that got shot, people that hid, heroic. Joshua took my daughter in the back room, and that's my hero. He saved my daughter. The people that piled on top of my wife in the patio that this guy was facing when we went at him, they saved my wife's life. You know, and that's why I keep saying, like, everyone in that room, regardless of what they were doing. So I'm like, everybody in there is a hero, and nothing I did was heroic. What I did was protect my family. And at that time, like I've said before, everybody in that room was my family. And that included myself. And if you don't do anything, what's going to happen? You know, I mean, the only thing I can imagine was like the worst. So you have to stop whatever it was that was doing it. And I didn't trust that anybody would be there in enough time to stop it from being the worst thing ever. It was horrible.
You mentioned Kelly Loving. She passed away. Derek Rump passed away. Ashley Pa passed away. Raymond, your son-in-law, passed away. And Daniel Aston, you know, we think about those names. I think about them all the time. I seriously.
So, like, Daniel's Wyatt's boyfriend, Kelly Loving's family came to the brewery the day we opened, and I met her sister. Beautiful family. And they took her home to Memphis for her to be buried. And, you know, this is close knit. You know, the police officer that helped me put tourniquets on my best friend in that moment ended up being a guy that's in the reservists here in Colorado. And he actually is one of his soldiers is one of my employees. You know, I mean, it's that close. Mm. It's not like, you know, Colorado Springs is not New York. You can't get lost in the next block. Somebody will know you a couple blocks down the road. And that doesn't mean it's good or bad. It just means it's a small town and suburbia kind of thing. And that was what made this so powerful and so, I think, so disgusting, because it made this community deal with something that it never should have to.
How does it feel in the community now? I mean, does it feel like, have you guys come together? It sounds like you have a little bit, but is it, what does it feel like?
It's weird. Listen, me, Jesse, and Cass have our moments of being in larger crowds, and especially having the brewery for us. I tried to shake everybody's hand that spent the time with us, you know, when we opened up, and it's been overwhelming, the amount of love. But I have to go in the back and take a break. I just can't do too many crowds right now. Cassie is picking and choosing when she comes out, even just going to the store. She's making sure that she's comfortable before she does it. And this is still only one. I mean, we're on the 1 month anniversary today, and we didn't even think about it until Chip told us last night. We went to visit Chip and Joanne last night, and we just started chatting about it. And he was like, you know, it's been a month, and it feels like it happened yesterday. Mm. And the moment of it actually happened, it felt like 2 weeks, you know, in the 6 minutes or whatever minute number of minutes it was. Time changes, and it's going to change forever. And I talked to Cass a lot about it, and I'm like, you know, you may feel good today, and tomorrow you're going to feel angry, and you're going to step on one of the dog's toys, and you're going to get pissed off at the dog or that toy. But it has nothing to do with that. You're going to be mad because you stepped on that toy because you're on crutches and you have a broken knee, and this guy did this to you. Mm-hmm. And that's the root of the anger. It doesn't have anything to do with the dog or the toy. And in 5 years, when you're thinking about Raymond and you get mad at something else, it'll be because this guy took Raymond from you, and you're thinking about what could have been. That's what's hard about PTSD. And that's what I don't think people understand. It's not about, I mean, the gore and all that is horrible, but it is really about the anger of how you've been changed and how you deal with that down the road. It's not easy. I've sought out counseling. I've gotten medicines and everything. And I'm pleased with how, I think it was about 5 years of me working hard to get to a place where I'm almost manageable. I'm not. My wife will tell you there's nights when I'm completely out of control, and I understand
it now.
And this
is, this stems from what you saw. This is the PTSD from the military.
Yeah. But see, those are techniques that and experiences that they've shared with me on the other side, but now they're on my side. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a wall that was always been there, and now we're all on the same side of the wall.
Do you think you're uniquely equipped to? Do you think you were put in that nightclub, in Club Q that night for a reason? Do you think you were put there to save people?
I don't know. I think that's up to a higher being to determine. We had just done, and we do this every year at our brewery, is Dia de los Muertos. We celebrate it for 4 days at the brewery, and we have memorials and tributes to everybody we love. And for this year, we had folks come in. And I know this is kind of goofy, but this is how we've leaned on too. We have folks come in they can kind of see your aura or spirits around you or whatever.
And this was prior to the shooting?
Yeah. This was in our, the beginning of November, the first week of November, we had our Dia de los Muertos event. So it was 10 days before this. And Cassie had gotten sick one time, about 3 years ago, really, really sick, almost died. And my cousin looked at Cassie and said, "Your grandfather's with you. I can see him." And she was like, "Oh my God." And Cassie's into this stuff. I was kind of like, "Wow, that's kind of weird, but okay, whatever." And then during Dia de los Muertos, two people that can see, two separate people said the same thing to Cassie. "Your grandfather's with you. Your grandfather's with you." And I had shared it with my cousin who had seen it the first time. And they go, "Yeah, dude, it's strong with her." And so we kind of have taken a lot of solace in that too, that Cassie we believe she has people taking care of her. And that was at that moment that all of this happened, and we made it out. We didn't all make it out. You know, five of us didn't make it, But you look at the Pulse, you look at all these other Uvalde, when these idiots are left in a room on their own for extended period of time, there's no stopping them unless you do something. And, you know, I hope that Thomas, I, and the trans woman and everybody else in that room did something to stop, you know, even if it was just applying pressure on someone's wound, you know, or helping them out the door. That's all I can hope for. But that's what we've kind of looked at is, hey, you know, things kind of lined up with what we were doing and how we believe and our culture. You know, we celebrate death. We don't frown upon it. We celebrate it. Right. So, you know, when Raymond passed and we did the services, Cassie was, she took a lot of solace in that being the last moments of something that was beautiful. It was a very beautiful relationship. And I trusted him with my daughter. That's not going to happen very easily, mm-hmm. especially with me.
Well, I bet you, I can imagine you being very protective. I mean, it's clearly in your nature to be protective. I see that. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What do you do with the anger? What do you do with it?
For me, it's hard. I've learned to kind of accept it, you know, hey, I have to kind of work through it. I'll remove myself a lot of the time. And a lot of the times I'll be happy. And then I leave like a conversation. I'll just leave. And because it's something that'll kind of just make me feel weird and I'll leave.
What about the anger in the past month? What do you do with that anger as you think about him who came in and did the unthinkable? What do you do with that anger? With that anger?
The anger and all that I put to him as I was engaged with him. So I am perfectly comfortable with the fact that I did everything I had to do to get my, if you want to call it revenge or whatever. I did things to him that hopefully he will never ever forget. And this is new for me too, because I got to wait for the justice system to do whatever it does. Right. So there is no thinking about him in the next 4 to 5 or however long years this is going to take. We're going to have to relive this every time we go on the stand or every time we go into a courtroom. And that's, I think that's the scarier part. Me and Jess and Cass have been thinking, we've been talking about it. We're like, okay, so once we're finally out of that groove, we're going to look at each other and go, all right, we got to go back to court today and start all over again. You know? So it's a process we've not, none of us have gone through. And so we're going to make that journey together. And we're going to work our way through it. But again, like I said, it's all about taking solace in what you have and keep moving.
I don't know anything about anything, but I'll tell you what I think. I think that too many people in America know what it's like to go through a mass shooting. I'm grateful I don't know what it's like. I think you are a member, you and your family and everybody who was there that night is now a member of that club. And I'm so sorry you're a member of that club. And I know that tragically 5 people were killed senselessly that night. I know that. And I know one of them was your daughter's boyfriend, your son-in-law, Raymond. But I also know that because of you and the other people there that did things, I know that it would have been a lot more, you know. And I want to say some to you as somebody who takes a lot of pride in going to a lot of drag shows and gay bars. And I want people to know why the gay bars are so important. And it's because our community couldn't be in the light of day back in the day. It was illegal to be us. And so the only place we could gather were gay bars.
When I talked to the owner of the club, he was telling me about the patio and why the fencing was so long, high up. It was an 8-foot fence. And I go, the kids can't get out of there. And I looked at him, I go, was that because they didn't want to see you guys? And he just laughed at me, goes, Rich, we did this 20 years ago. Yes, I had so many permits and regulations that we couldn't, everything had to be sealed in. Nobody wanted to see mm-hmm. us. We couldn't party like, because I go, dude, I have a patio of a 4-foot fence. That's all I need for my brewery. And he's got an 8-footer that no one can penetrate. Not to keep people in, but because people don't want to see. And that's it's horrible, man. It's not stuff that's where I think heroes come from is fighting through stuff like that. And as a young Mexican kid, I've gone through the same thing. You know, the one kid in the room that's dark or has never, you know, done one thing, you just stand out and it hurts and it sucks. But at the end of the day, if you don't do it, right, if you're not that only person in that room, then you don't make progress. Because hopefully you can make some influence and impact. I've always told my mom and dad and my wife, Like, if I leave this world and at least one person goes, man, you know what? That guy helped me out. That's all I'm looking for. And there's nothing else about it, you know?
Well, then, Richard, then mission accomplished, if that's what you're looking for. Mission accomplished. Because of you that night. I mean, I have to tell you, it will always be an unthinkable tragedy what happened there. But it would have been so much worse if you hadn't been there. So thank you. I think you are an absolute hero. And I think, I don't know, I can't tell people how to act in this scenario. I don't know anything about it, but I do know that you made a difference that day. And I just want to say, as a gay person and in the public, a person who understands how important it is to have allies, a person who, like so many other Americans, fears the worst, what you went through, fears that every day. I just want to say thank you. Give my love to Jess. Give my love to Cassie. And give my love to everybody in the entire town, in the community, and Club Q. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. We'll be right back. My thanks to Richard Fierro. I can't imagine. I can't imagine what we could be talking about if he hadn't been there that night. But I do know that we lost five beautiful people. This show is dedicated to Kelly Loving, Derek Rump, Ashley Paul, Raymond Green Vance, and Daniel Aston. And also a big thank you to one of my heroes now, Richard Fierro. Thank you. Hug your loved ones. You know, hug them. Love you. Love you. Next week, a much lighter show. Randy Rainbow will be here for some much needed levity. Thank you all so much. And, you know, try to be a hero one day if you're ever called on it. Thank you. See you next time. Hey, it's me, Ross Matthews. Thanks so much for listening. It means a ton. Make sure you like us, give us a good review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find us on video at Cumulus Podcast Network on YouTube.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.